My name is Michael McCusker. Well, I suppose that some of you, perhaps most of you, are aware that LNG is rampant again. Today continues a hearing on Bradwood LNG's petition to build its terminal east of Oregon on the Columbia River. And this hearing, which is at the Guy Boyington Building from 3 p.m. to approximately 7 p.m. this evening, will be concerned with public testimony on 8 new applications by Northern Star, the home corporation of Bradwood. These, as I unscramble a newspaper here, these 8 are approximately, without explaining them too much, mitigation plan, which is the area in question, the proposed site at Peterson Point and Svensson Island, wetlands and waterways will be affected in how. This plan has had a history of being later incomplete. This is, and Clatsop County staff has recommended denial of it. This is from an article from the Astorian I'm reading at the moment. Shoreline Management Plan, that's number 2, which deals with 2 locations, the proposed terminal site and Clifton Channel, which ties into the dredging. And will it cause erosion to the channel shoreline? And what will the dredging operations do to movement of water along the Columbia River? Staff recommended denial of this also because it was too vague. Park and Ride Site Plan, and this site on the south side of U.S. Highway 30 near Taylorville Road interchange is intended to be a temporary parking site for construction workers to reduce traffic problems on the road to Bradford Landing. Staff also denied this one and reported that most information and county standards had been met, but not all. And then they approved 5 others: conditional use permit for Clifton Road and Bradwood Road Plan, the erosion control and sediment plan, the dredged material disposal plan, the riparian vegetation restoration plan, and the decommission plan, which, aside from the others, is also of very great import. It's like all the Walmarts that are left shut down and empty all over the country whenever they decide to build a bigger plant. Also, that place in Warrenton right now. The decommission, what happens if the plant is shut down? How will it be restored to a useful, non-hazardous site? At any rate, those are the 5 that the Clatsop County Planning Staff gave the high sign to. And today, and perhaps also the next hearing would be held the 13th, if all public comment has not been heard by tonight, and perhaps one other time too. So I'd like to weigh in with my opinion, and I have to say that this is perhaps my opinion only in the entire cosmos. It's sort of a composite of many things that I have written about this in the past, trying to tie them all together. And I call it, as I did once before, fool's gold. Astoria, the oldest city in the American West, celebrates its 199th birthday on Monday, April 12th. There have been many and varied flamboyant economic schemes to make Astoria a world-class port city surrounded by thriving satellite communities. First, of course, if early hopes of fur trading are left out, was Astoria's golden era of salmon fishing and canning that made the lower Columbia River the cannery capital of the world in the late 19th century, as well as logging of the great spruce and fir forests that dominated the landscape. For a brief time, Astoria had a population of nearly 30,000 in the 1920s and anticipated a peak of 100,000, shamelessly touting itself as the New York City of the Pacific Coast. but a century of short-sighted greed and careless oversight of the environment that enriched Astoria, decimated the salmon, clear-cut the forests, and ripped apart the big dreams, and the Lower Columbia decayed on both sides. More recent grandiose and perhaps desperate schemes such as wall-to-wall aluminum plants, which would make the Lower Columbia, in the words of President Richard Nixon, the light metals capital of the world, giant coal docks, oil module manufacturing for the Alaska fields, to name a few, were all stillborn. Now the Lower Columbia River is being inundated by mega corporations that threaten to dominate local politics and economics. This upper left edge of the country seems to be among the last fertile sites for corporate America to penetrate and exploit, just as it was the final frontier on the continent for Euro-American civilization to expand into. We have been preemptively invaded by LNG right here at the end of the Lewis and Clark Trail. Whatever value put to liquefied natural gas as an interim energy source between oil and alternative energy, the method of sneaking it through the back door with the complicity of the Astoria Port Commission with scarce public notice has rendered suspect every claim made by the LNG corporations. Apologists said the secrecy was necessary because of competition and pointed to three other LNG corporations who also wanted a piece of the Columbia. But it was a dishonest argument at its very root. The competition was obviously waiting to covertly rush in and gobble up the Lower Columbia while the shock was still setting in. From the beginning, when LNG was foisted upon us by the Port Commission through secrecy and deception, with the public given little opportunity to have any say, all sorts of crucial issues have been skimmed over or negated by the Port and Clatsop County commissioners, such as public safety and maritime security, impacts on ocean and river travel, effects on fishing and commerce, amounts of environmental contamination and pollution, the wisdom of building huge, volatile terminals on earthquake subduction zones, and the probable large-scale obliteration of fish habitat and protected wetlands. Questions about LNG's unstable effects on local communities have received evasive answers, not to mention blatant disinformation about the possible calamitous consequences upon our beautiful, fragile environment that has been the battered victim of numerous earlier echo rapes. The entire LNG endeavor has been an egregious example of duplicity, misinformation, and denial of public process to approve or disapprove. Instead of being the voice of decision, the people have all along been relegated to being mere supplicants to arbitrary decisions that will most likely affect our collective environment for generations. And there is also the matter that the federal government claims the right to overrule any local decision to exclude LNG. The U.S. Senate even rejected a proposal that would allow state governors to prevent LNG because of public health or environmental concerns. The Oregon state government is currently in the process of overturning the federal mandate set up by the Bush administration. Yet President Obama's recent support for renewal of nuclear power plants and expansion of offshore oil drilling might also affect LNG proposals. The Clatsop County Commission should never have had authority or power to decide LNG on the Columbia River. LNG is just too big and with too many stark consequences for a single county commission to be the prime decision maker, especially one that has been severely criticized, with two members recalled by voters, for acting for private interests rather than for the public its members were elected to represent. Only the people have the right to decide vital issues that have such probable outcomes as devastating the river estuary and the enormous alteration of the Columbia River culture in which we live, as well as protection of the public health from gaseous emissions and the dangers of exploding LNG tanks. From the outset of the LNG invasion, a referendum should have been held about LNG, if not by the entire states of Oregon or Washington, at least by the communities of the two states on both sides of the Columbia that will be directly impacted by LNG. Also, the tendency to treat each LNG project separately rather than the combined effects of all proposed LNG projects on the river, of which there are two, and its communities is very narrow and delusional. An election should include them all on a single ballot. The Lower Columbia community is divided over the prospect of LNG terminals. Although LNG supporters hope for so-called family wage jobs to alleviate the menial and low-paying employment currently dominant in River City and environs, many residents and local businesses are concerned that LNG terminals and supertankers will wipe out what they see as vital economic and cultural gains of the past few years and cost more jobs than LNG will create. Others fear for their health, even their lives. Columbia River dwellers are threatened from two directions. Federally sanctioned low-level radioactive releases from Hanford during its deconstruction upriver, and gaseous pollution and possible combustion, possibly much worse, from liquefied natural gas downriver. Hot stuff on one end, LNG on the other. With the exception of recall elections of Clatsop County commissioners, only one other public vote has been taken on LNG, and that was a subsidiary issue, that of construction of an LNG pipeline that would run through public lands as well as private properties. It was soundly voted down, though efforts have been made to annul the vote through legislation, such as an end run around the electorate by the county commission that decreed a landowner could change zoning so the Bradwood LNG pipeline could go through his property. Two Clatsop County commissioners have been recalled over the LNG issue because of their arbitrary support of LNG despite public outcry. They not only discredited but disgraced their responsibilities in two areas. Their collaboration with powerful private interests in which they might personally profit, and their contempt for the public will. Two other commissioners barely survived a recall vote. Perhaps the entire county commission should be voted out of office in the May elections, as well as everyone on the Port Commission, because incumbents and newcomers alike have been poisonously tainted by the corruption of LNG. It has been 5 years since Port of Astoria commissioners sneaked LNG leases past the public, and less than a year since the Warrenton City Council and its mayor disingenuously played peekaboo with Walmart. In the instance of LNG, the consequences will be catastrophic to the local environment. Walmart will be no less devastating to local business culture. The snide deceit of surreptitiously imposing both LNG and Walmart upon us with only a charade of public involvement has been abetted by local officials who appear to hold little respect for their constituencies and who, of course, yell foul when their duplicity is challenged. Invasion by big business into local communities generally includes such iniquities as secret deals, influence peddling, deceptive treatment of a resident populace, intimidation against public resistance, and the corruption of local quislings. Incursion of corporate cash register politics has deeply divided our communities. Whether we want it or not, we are pawns in a ruthless worldwide culture war of resource plunder and profit that pits local communities against corporate octopi that are implacably unsympathetic to the concerns of people and places they ravage. We are enduring at a neighborhood level the same mode of corporate subversion that permeates Congress, the White House, and Supreme Court. If anyone looks closely enough and connects the dots, they would probably discover the identical klepto-cult of speculation, corruption, and fraud that brought the nation's economy to financial collapse, which has impoverished and made jobless and homeless millions of Americans. Stripped of its fictions and fanfare, all democracy really does is give ordinary people a few tools to use against the perfidious misuse of public resources and political offices by avaricious special interests. And if they are not used, we lose the rights and liberties we do possess. And that is something I wrote. Fool's Gold, I titled it. And I'd like to carry this on a skosh more with an article written by Peter Hutala. Now, he wrote this back in 2005. And it was originally published in Hip Fish, and I reprinted it about a month or so later in my newspaper, the North Coast Times Eagle. I've always felt since this LNG that we must go back to the beginning, to where the fraud was first hatched, instead of dealing with it down the line with every hoop that we're supposed to jump through. That we go back to the core, and we just might have it, and show it to be not only fraudulent, but patently unconstitutional, the way LNG was foisted upon us. And Peter, more or less in his article, which was written in January 2005, explains exactly what happened as it happened. And I think it's for us to remember. Living with a Ghastly Secret by Peter Hutala. For 3 months, it was a well-kept secret. Few other than the Port of Astoria commissioners and selected local elected officials from Warrenton, Astoria, and Clatsop County, and some of their staff, knew the truth. They kept their lips sealed. A $500 million investment was at stake, with tax revenues a go-go. And what's more, family wage jobs. It was better to keep quiet, lest the not in our backyard folks muck up a good thing. The cryogenic gold rush was heading for the Skipanon Peninsula. 3 days after the presidential election of 2004, the Port of Astoria convened a special meeting and granted a 60-year lease for 96 acres of Skipanon Peninsula to a limited liability corporation, Skipanon LLC, set up by an energy company called Calpine for the purpose of bringing in mass quantities of supercooled liquefied natural gas, LNG. Earlier in 2004, Calpine Corporation had withdrawn plans to build a similar LNG import terminal near Eureka, California. Fierce local opposition from fishermen, downtown business owners, and conservationists forced the project to be shelved before a lease could be signed. Not so in Clatsop County, Oregon. Sure, there is community opposition now that the citizens know about Calpine's proposal, but that lease got signed a full 2 days after the Port of Astoria let the press know that a lease was under consideration. Calpine had control of the property. In this cryogenic gold rush, as in any other, control of property is essential if the riches are to be tapped. Calpine, quote, staked their claim, unquote, to the Skipanon Peninsula. At least three other competitors are working to secure viable LNG importing sites in the lower Columbia River. Calpine knows that only one such facility, at most, might be granted permits by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC. The port chose not to wait for a regularly scheduled meeting to address the LNG issue and didn't take the time to first fully inform the public as to the possible consequences of their action. As a result, many local citizens were outraged. When the port and Calpine held meetings after the lease decision was made, the outcry at backroom politics cozying up to big bucks almost overshadowed the trepidation over the dangers of the project. The process to this point, even more than Calpine's project, has divided the community. Peter Guerin, executive director of the Port of Astoria, defended the port's handling of the situation in a letter to the Daily Astorian, saying, "In making its decision to follow normal and legal public process, not more, to lease the site to Calpine, the commissioners did so with an understanding that site control was the mechanism by which Calpine could assess the feasibility of the site, and that many different permits must be filed and approved by a variety of public agencies, each with their own input process opportunities." And that was former executive director of the Port of Astoria, Peter Guerin. Big projects like this require numerous approvals at the local, state, and federal levels, right? Wrong. The FERC insists that the federal government has sole siting authority over LNG import terminals. This doctrine of federal preemption is being challenged in court by the state of California, but right now, according to the Bush administration, Oregon, let alone Clatsop County or Warrenton, has zero control over whether Skipanon LLC is allowed to build its LNG receiving station. If Calpine applies to Oregon's Energy Facility Siting Council and Oregon disagrees with the FERC, the feds win, period. Recently, dozens of proposals for LNG plants have surfaced nationwide. Coastal areas of local population, of lower population in particular, are being targeted, partly because Congress has clearly stated a preference that these facilities are to be sited remotely. Another motive for choosing small towns was offered by Mayor Ed Lambert of Fall River, Massachusetts, a city where LNG important is muscling in despite local opposition. Mayor Lambert said, "I think it's no accident that the industry has chosen places like Fall River, which tend to be lower income, working class communities where they don't expect educated local opposition." Remote siting sure sounds good to me after reading the December 2004 report by Sandia National Laboratories that depicts possible, though not likely, and that's a quote, events that could cause LNG to spill from a tanker, which would then boil and ignite, melting steel a half mile away and burning buildings and people more than a mile distant. And then there are the suffocating gas vapor clouds that could drift much further until they burst into a dramatic inferno. But barring an unusual accident, sabotage, or terrorism, what might it be like living with an LNG import terminal in our midst? Why might the Port of Astoria have considered a more extensive public process, or even some preservation of local control before capitulating to Calpine's insistence that they must have control of the property? Well, there is this matter of exclusion zones, otherwise known as safety or security zones. These zones are designed to keep terrorists, crazy people, sloppy boaters, and idiots away from the LNG tankers and storage tanks. As they near the LNG facility near Kenai, Alaska, vessels must give the LNG tankers 1,000 yards of clearance. When LNG tankers roll toward Boston Harbor, all maritime traffic is cleared for 2 miles ahead and 1,000 yards to the side. The bridge is closed, and aircraft are barred from the vicinity. 1,000 yards, it seems, like a considerable distance until you start to think about steel melting at half mile or flesh frying at twice that far. Heck, at 4 miles, if you believe some studies. There is no reason to believe that a 1,000-yard clearance from these terrorist targets would not be required by Homeland Security, and plenty of reasons why the space between these behemoths, 900 to 1,200 feet long, LNG tankers, and other ships, pleasure craft, and fishing vessels should not be considerably farther. Commercial fishing, shipping, and enjoyment of the wonders of the mouth of the Columbia River would have to wait. Actually, some would have to flee, as LNG tankers and their armada of gunboats take the river. Escorts of up to half a dozen Coast Guard vessels accompany LNG tankers approaching other ports, along with two or three powerful tugs. At least four times a week, the Columbia River entrance channel would be closed, along with much of the lower river, fishing, and crabbing ground. Homeland Security could also prohibit access to Warrenton Harbor while tankers are at the dock. Well, there is one bit of adjustment we would have to make, subjugating all commercial and recreational maritime traffic on the river in deference to the LNG gold. Calpine Corporation has not yet fully disclosed the pollution that would accompany their 50 to 75 job-producing enterprise. What Calpine suggests is to build a 150-megawatt gas-fired power plant to warm up the LNG even as it produces electricity. This plant and its associated activities would be the largest single source of air pollution in Clatsop County. Much of the pollution generated by this plant would severely harm our most vulnerable people, the very young and the elderly. We could expect, based on similar proposals, that 100,000 pounds of nitrogen oxides, which form corrosive nitric acid when combined with water, would be released from the power plant each year. 20,000 pounds of volatile organic compounds, VOCs, such as cancer-causing benzene, would be dumped in the air along with 64,000 pounds of tiny and potentially toxic particulates called PMT-10. Huge amounts more air pollution would come from the 100 tons of fuel per day the LNG tankers burn while in port, as well as from the diesel exhaust spewed by support craft. Okay, that is another change in lifestyle that we might not get to choose, inhaling toxic fumes that cause asthma and cancer. Unfortunately, I can't help but imagine the easy transition from the government secrecy we have already observed to government oppression in the name of security. As with the periodic shipments of LNG to the Boston area, there is no reason to believe that armed guards will not line the shores of our communities as the LNG tankers come and go. The Sandia National Laboratories report enhanced, and that's a quote, security measures as the primary means to reduce the chances of an intentional LNG spill and fire. What do you think? Would this police state security encourage desirable tourism and clean, safe business and industry? Aside from effectively abdicating local control over public safety issues surrounding LNG import, the Port of Astoria Commission left at least three areas of local concern to the whim of the federal government. Traditional maritime traffic, whether for business or pleasure, would need to defer to petrochemical transport. The air quality of our area would be substantially degraded and the health of many of our citizens sacrificed, and our freedom to visit the waterfronts of the region would be tempered by the presence of security forces with automatic weapons. There are local issues that concern the quality of our life and the nature of economic activity we want to encourage. No federal agency should make those decisions on our behalf. It is up to us to insist that those we have elected, including the Port of Astoria commissioners, take a powerful stand to defend our values. Our leaders must forthrightly acknowledge that shutting the public out of the process before leasing public property for a dangerous and outrageously controversial enterprise was a ghastly mistake. And of course, they have not admitted that in these 5 years. And that was by Peter Huttila. And before I close the show, along the same subject, I would like to read a really good poem by Carolyn Dunn, Liquefied Natural Gas. Any tanker that will carry LNG will be tossed hard by the notorious, conflicting waters at our river's mouth, or surviving those could become the target for some zealot just now born, who years from now will climb aboard this floating hearse, turn a valve handle, light a match, one of several stuck in his boot just to make sure, and start the conflagration that will make the diners at the river's edge and the tourists buying small-town trinkets and the lawyer attending a port commission meeting and the dentist deadening an open mouth and the parking meter employee chalking a tire and the woman walking into City Hall to pay her water bill and the dog barking at a scrabble of crows in its yard and the plumber cleaning the U-pipe under a sink and the student nurse performing her first catheterization and the kid walking his skateboard to the other side of the hill and the grandparent counting out cash for a grandchild's birthday present and the man using his cell phone while walking down the sidewalk and a shopkeeper putting a back soon sign on the door of the shop, and the 15 girls and boys clapping their hands in the nursery school, all stop, all at once in unison, so to speak, under the superheated blast that was sparked by the match and now travels the path of the wind off our ocean, so that moments afterwards, the obsidian black of the town melt will be what our roads lead to, and all those mentioned and not mentioned, a swift ash within a blinding monument of flame. And that was Carolyn Dunn, Liquefied Natural Gas.